Hello and welcome to another episode of Seattle Nice. I am Erica C. Barnett, and I am here with my co-host, Sandeep Kalshe.
Yeah, another David Hyde free episode of Seattle Nice. We are really we're testing the limits of how far we can go before the whole thing implodes. So we shall see.
David Hyde free, but we do have a very special guest this week. It's Josh Feit, our Publicola co-founder and news expert, occasional columnist for Publicola. How you doing, Josh?
I'm doing good.
Our former boss from the Stranger
Our
days,
former boss.
Right?
Let's
yeah.
Talk about combustible.
And now I'm his boss.
Yes, there you go.
Right, if you can get me to write a column, yeah.
So we'll talk about that offline. So our first topic is actually, I'm going to introduce it because it's a story that I've been all over. And it's the story of John Arthur Wilson, who is the King County assessor. He's also running for King County executive. And earlier this week, the entire King County Council, minus Reagan Dunn, who wasn't there, voted to call on him to resign. And said that they had no confidence in him after credible allegations, I would say, and pretty well documented allegations that he stalked and harassed his ex. He has responded by saying that there is no way he will ever resign and has been really defiant and has kind of made himself an ongoing story in a way that has surprised me as a reporter because he is just incredibly defiant about it. So that's the basic story. And I guess I want to get your guys' take on John Arthur Wilson's reaction to these allegations and the county council's decision to unanimously condemn him.
What a crazy soap opera this has kind of turned into, right? I mean, Erica, to your point, yeah, it's not only defiant, but, you know, posted a legal document and it's been posting on Facebook, a legal document asking the court to vacate the restraining order that had been, you know, that his former girlfriend or domestic partner had filed against him. And basically making the case that she's been irrational and vindictive. I forget what the phrase was, Erica,
he called her crazy, basically. He said she was unstable and volatile.
Yeah,
and that she was just mad because he wouldn't give her money.
Right. And that, you know, look, and he's making this argument, and that may be true, right? Or may not be true. But it's also true, as you point out in the piece that you wrote, that there's a whole bunch of evidence that he engaged in various forms of conduct that looked pretty volatile and unstable and, you know, highly, highly questionable, right? Beyond the, as you point out, the, you know, texting over and over and over again, you know, after she's asked him to stop, even when a police officer, you know, we were in the middle of an incident, and even when the police officer told him to stop calling, he kept calling, you know, and texting after that. And the allegation that has been made that, so far as I know, he has not denied that he called the, and this to me is just so far beyond the pale, he called the boss of her alleged boyfriend and tried to get the alleged boyfriend fired from his job by making a false claim of sexual assault. I mean, that's pretty out there, right? So, yeah, John Arthur Wilson, defiant. I don't know, Josh, you're the...
We've all known him for a long time, too, we should say.
I mean, he doesn't sound well to me, and this is just, like, embarrassing for him and his... you know, former partner. I pull the camera back. The guy's been running for King County executive and like no one, it's a campaign that doesn't seem to have any traction. I don't know what interest or, I mean, Erica, you tell me how much money he's raised or what kind of support.
I mean, very, very little, relatively speaking. I went, the last time I looked, it was like 50,000 something.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of a strange and sad, it seems like we're on the run up to a conclusion of his career, which has always been kind of, it just has not seemed super relevant to Seattle politics. I've never really fully understood, his motivations and I just find him a confusing character. But yeah, this just seems like a sad ending to me.
the Facebook posting to me is like a great example of that. Like he is just, you know, kind of having a tantrum. And like Sandeep said, I mean, none of us are inside this relationship. And obviously they've gotten back together a number of times, but he is, he's lashing out on Facebook and he filed this, this legal motion that includes information about an incident that he, you know, describes in the legal motion. And then it includes a police report that describes it a different way. So he's making this, you know, allegation that he was the victim, not his ex-girlfriend, and that she shoved him in an incident, you know, which is not how he described it at the time. It's not how she described it. He later recanted calling the police. I mean, you know, so it's just, it is just bizarre to me on top of, you know, being, I think, quite, you know, arguably abusive to just continue going after this woman. But it is really bizarre. And I think that the job of King County assessor is not particularly political. That's his job. He's the tax assessor. But I do think that, you know, to continue in that job, which he was elected to, he can't be removed by the county council, only by the voters, to continue for, you know, 2.5 more years or whatever he has just seems really unconscionable. He's collecting taxpayer money. He gets like $225,000 a year. And you know, I mean, I think that the case for him to resign is very strong. And the case for him to stay is, you know, what everybody's making it all up and he's the ultimate victim. It just, it seems really untenable. But on the other hand, I mean, there'd have to be a recall campaign if the voters wanted to get rid of him.
Right. And I think he's flirting with a recall at this point. I mean, you know, to your point, it's a high bar in Washington state to actually move a recall campaign forward. You can't recall somebody because you don't like their politics or whatever. There has to be, I think the term is like malfeasance. But it's basically like you have to essentially have committed, you know, really egregious, out of bounds, bad behavior, criminal behavior, that kind of thing for, to meet the legal standard for a recall. But it certainly looks like in this case that this would pass that legal muster. I just wonder if it's such a low down non-political office that nobody's going to bother, you know, maybe, but
yeah, I mean, why do we elect the tax assessor? That just seems, I mean, it's sure, kind of calling right. that into question for me.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. It seems like a weird elective office. You're right. What, like, does this really need to be an independent elective office? It seems like a pretty technical position. So, yeah. So who knows whether there'll be a recall or not, but I'm not a lawyer, but it certainly looks like that there would be grounds for that to happen. But to Josh, I'll just come back real quick to Josh's point. The fact that John Arthur, and yeah, I said this when we did the, when we talked about this on previously, I've known him for years and years, always liked John Arthur. He's a former Seattle Weekly political reporter from way back in the day. So Alt Weekly background, you know. But man, the fact that he's continuing not just to hang on to his office and be defiant, but to continue to run this campaign for King County executive, this sort of seemingly even before this happened, kind of no hope campaign, but to do it now with this cloud of stuff hanging over his head just seems really, really questionable about, you know, what is John Arthur's mental state here? I, you know, just,
no, that's again, I mean, that's why sort of he doesn't seem well to me. And to that point, Sandeep, like, who's his constituency? What, I've just never been clear from the start on who and why he's running for King County executive at this stage in his career. And I mean, anyone can run, right? Anyone, but I just don't know that, I don't know who he represents.
He's trying to run a kind of law and order, you know, sort of campaign coming from the, you know, I think trying to consolidate.
Sandeep, I know you don't want to say coming from the right, but he's coming from the right.
Right. Of course he's trying to, yeah. Of course, Sandeep, he's trying to do that, but no one is asking him to do, it seems like it's about him trying to consolidate some constituency that may be out there, but it's not a constituency that's calling on John Arthur Wilson. I just, you know, who is this guy? He's been around forever. He's been in politics and just no one, he doesn't seem to have any kind of following or I don't picture someone asking him to run, right?
He definitely has a following on Facebook. People there are coming to his support. But, you know, I mean, not a lot of people, but it is kind of interesting, you know, his Facebook page. You can look at it and see who is supporting him. And there are some pretty prominent local names.
They're supporting him in this standoff with his ex?
With his standoff, yeah. With
yeah,
his ex.
So great. That's your support base, right? You got people defending you in this story. But that's not a... So we've already, like, once removed or twice removed from a race for King County executive. You know, I don't know. Sure.
And I think that this might be... I mean, to be super charitable, this might be why there has been basically no discussion of the allegations against him, which go back. I mean, this is just the latest round of allegations. The Seattle Times reported in January on all the allegations from the previous year. And I went to or I watched a forum that all of the county council candidates were at, and he didn't get asked about it. This was before before Publicola broke the latest news about the allegations from last month.
Way to go, ACB.
Just got to give myself a little plug there. But I mean, all this other stuff was known, and it hasn't been coming up in the campaign until this most recent round. So cynically, I'd say that people are bringing it up because it differentiates them in the county executive race. Claudia Balducci and Girmay Zahalai were the first two to come out and say that he should resign. So that's like the cynical explanation. But the charitable explanation is nobody really took him seriously as a candidate to begin with. And so why bother even going into this when he's going to come in a distant third?
Support for Seattle Nice comes from Hearth Protection, offering commercial protective services with trauma-informed, community-oriented, and evidence-based physical security practices, including on-site security, event support, and workforce training for businesses and nonprofits in the Salish Sea region. Mission-driven leaders trust Hearth to proactively handle security challenges across the full range of complexity and acuity. Armed or unarmed agents trained in de-escalation and advanced first aid are available 24/7. More information at hearthprotection.org. Hearth Protection. Don't let fear make your world smaller.
I was surprised when the first round of allegations came out that there wasn't more attention paid to them. It seemed like that the Seattle Times dropped a story and then it just disappeared, you know?
Well, you'll find that often happens when men act shitty.
Right. Even at the time, it seemed like a lot of the, you know, the main allegations were laid out there, right? Including the calling the boss of the, you know, ex-boyfriend or alleged boyfriend and the stalking allegations, all of that stuff was in that first round.
Tracking her, using her device, and showing up at her house where she had moved to try to avoid him. Yeah, lots of really.
I was surprised that nobody then brought it up again. There were multiple other stories written about the King County executive's race subsequent to that, where this didn't get brought up. You know, and that did puzzle me, I will say, And I thought it was odd. Obviously, that dam has broken now, and people are talking about it and paying attention to it. And that's just the fact that, and to Josh's point, yeah, it's not like the campaign had a bunch of momentum or there was this, you know, big wave of people who were mad about public safety that were sort of flocking to the banner of John Arthur Wilson. And so when he's saying, oh, he's trying to make the argument that this call for him to resign is all political and it's being engineered by the two other, you know, candidates that are vying for the King County executive's office. And Erica, you said that the cynical view, but that's just kind of bullshit. I mean, a bunch of other people have also called for him to resign. The mayor put out a statement.
But the fact that the mayor who's running for re-election, I mean, the fact that nobody came forward the first time, I think is, you know, appalling. And I think that if people, I mean, this is, you know, my honest view, if people really cared about this and they really cared about, you know, stalking, domestic violence, harassment, I mean, this is stuff that, like, I would say most, if not, you know, most to many women have experienced some version of this. It's very relatable. And yet everybody stayed silent. And I think that, you know, by speaking up, you know, leaving aside the electoral issues, you know, and leaving aside whether John Arthur Wilson resigns or not, they could have brought up these issues and had a discussion about them when the first really horrifying allegations came out. And yet it was basically radio silence from all the politicians. And that is really disappointing.
I mean, this is the thing I was going to say before. It's just like, we live in a new era. No one gives a shit about, like, we have a felon in office. So as a president, so the the Standard and Bar, like to care about the King County assessor's bizarre phone calls and stalking, you know, I'm not surprised that no one gives a shit.
I think that's right. I mean, the old standards of conduct and behavior are the norms, right, have all been kind of wiped out. I mean, yeah, Trump's in office. He said, well, you all know what he said, and yeah.
I want to push back on both of you because you're suggesting there was like some era before this, before Trump, where people gave a fuck about women. And they gave a fuck about women being stalked or harassed. And I'm here to tell you that things have not, were not wonderful before at the national level. Yeah, I mean, norms, standards, everything has gone out the window. But I would say if this had happened 20 years ago, it would have also been crickets. 10 years ago, crickets. And now it was crickets until it came time for everybody to get mad in May. And so the fact that there were crickets in January, I don't know. I don't think that's because of Trump. I think that's just because it's how it's always been. Okay. I'm off my soapbox. That is just my reaction to that.
Same as it ever was. All right.
Same as it ever was.
All right. Well, now that we've settled the LaFair, you know, Jaws, which was John Arthur's nickname is Jaws, but let's move on to something. Oh my God! I feel like I'm here with two, the urbanist Taliban here, with both Erica, Josh. Just for our listeners' sake, just to dredge up old history, like in our era of The Stranger, we internally referred to Josh and our other boss Dan Savage as the monorail Taliban, right? Because they were obsessive monorail zealots at the time.
Who enthusiasm. Wasn't included in that? Me.
Yeah, you had written a skeptical piece about the cover piece for the Seattle Weekly about the monorail. That
I know. I almost didn't get hired because of that.
Cost you the Stranger's hiring at the time, but that enthusiasm, I guess, has translated into some urbanist thinking and energy. And so, Josh, I know you wanted to talk a bit about what you've been seeing recently around the Kathy Moore. Obviously, Kathy Moore has announced her resignation effective July 7th from the council. But you wanted to kind of weigh in on Kathy and the comp plan conversations at the council and some of the claims that have been made.
Main reaction, thanks, Sandeep. I mean, my main reaction is, you know, she seems to say that there's an that she's been driven out by an uncivil mob that does not let her speak. And I think what we're really seeing is that there's now there's an organized opposition that is articulating a POV that has not been around for the 40 years that her POV has been around and that we live under. And the zoning laws that we that have kind of marginalized a lot of people and caused an affordable housing crisis, right? So she's sort of saying it's as if she's presenting some new ideas and she's not being listened to. No, Kathy, your ideas have been governing city zoning law for decades and decades and decades. And there are now people that are not interested in having you reintroduce them and then to complain that she's being shut down. And frankly, I didn't see how she's being shut down. Like, she's offering amendments. She's giving speeches all the time. So the kind of claim that there's this uncivil dialogue and that she's not getting the mic is kind of ridiculous given how she has stalled and stalled the comp plan, right? So that's sort of nonsense. So that's the first point, right? Like, the it's not that there's an uncivil kind of environment. It's that there is an organized opposition that there has not been since 1994.
Okay. I think you're 50% righteous and 50% completely full of shit, right? in this way. Like, I think you're aligning a couple of different things together, right? On the one hand, you're absolutely right. There is this kind of resurgent urbanist, you know, idea set and movement and discourse that's happening in city politics.
Not resurgent, Sunday. Not resurgent.
No, well, okay.
It's new.
Okay, yeah.
It's new.
Yeah.
Resurgent.
New, this new and emerging and growing force in the city. And yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think there's plenty of polling data I've talked about previously to show that. And so to some extent, I do think some of the, you know, complaining about this stuff is like, you're just, you know, hey, there's a political battle happening now. And some of the kind of older, sort of more NIMBY-ish forces are on the defensive and kind of losing. Slowly, but you know, they're fighting a kind of rearguard action, but they are losing. But there's also like a shitload of incivility at the council too. And there's still like Shama Sawant showing up with her black shirts and, you know, doing that stuff. And that's not the urbanist movement and the urbanist pushback. That's just like the same kind of toxic bullshit we've had at the council for 10 years.
Right. Well, first of all, I know you're obsessed with Shama Sawant, and I understand that you and the old council are trying to legislate Shama Sawant out of existence, and this is a backlash council against Shama Sawant. The complaints that Kathy Moore makes, and by the way, Shama Sawant was a NIMBY, and so it was
that's
Shama Sawant.
Yeah,
that's right. And so the people that come and speak on behalf of Shama, they also yelled at the urbanists. But that's not what Kathy's complaining about, right? She is explicitly saying that she is being called a NIMBY. So she is talking about and defending herself against the opposition to her pushback to state legislation mandating more density. So I would disagree with you, Sandeep. It is about this issue.
Hey, Seattle Nice listeners. Seattle politics got you low? Well, get high with Uncle Ike's. Pissed at the mayor? Relax with a dollar joint. Pop a tire in a pothole, eat a $2 gummy, and chill. Whether you need something to pump you up for Saturday's protest or a mellow strain for your next sit-in, Ike's is your best friend. Now is the time to roll up, Seattle. Download the Ike's app today or head on over to Ike's.com. That's Ike's.com.
The specific thing that happened was that Kathy Moore got very upset at last week's comprehensive plan meeting at the Office of Planning and Community Development and the mayor's office because they were continuing to include a neighborhood center in the comp plan for Maple Leaf, which basically is 8 or so blocks where slightly more density will be allowed, apartment buildings, 3 to 6 stories. And she was really upset, she said, because people were protesting this and the council and the mayor and nobody was listening. And what she meant was there is a change.org petition that has something like 1,400 signatures. It's probably more by now, that says we don't want this thing. And it's from incumbent homeowners in the area who don't want housing in the area. And those voices have always been the loudest at City Hall. And now, as Josh said, they're not the loudest anymore. And so I think what Kathy Moore kind of globally doesn't seem to understand is that sometimes you have a really strong position and you believe in it a lot. Her position is she doesn't want more housing in this area. She doesn't want renters to live here. She doesn't want more neighbors. She wants things to stay the same. Sometimes you have a really strong position and sometimes you just lose. She's just losing because she's not in the majority. And that is how democracy works. And sometimes you lose. I mean, Shama Sawant lost all the time, to bring it back to her. I mean, people lose and they stay in the game. And, you know, Kathy Moore has decided that she doesn't want to do that. But the fact that she's losing is not a sign that the city is not listening. It's that they're listening to more people.
I agree with that. Yeah, you know.
Sandeep Kaushik stunned into silence.
I know. Yeah.
It ain't
beanbag. You put it out there, and sometimes you win, and sometimes you don't. Right? I mean, so yes, I agree with all of that. That's not a fair to say. Oh my God, because I lost this fight, nobody's listening. No, they heard the argument. They just disagree with it. I agree with that. That, you know, there's a divide over growth and density. And, you know, I mean, that's really what the fundamental divide is. It's how fast are we going to grow and how much are we going to try to meet the challenges created by growth by trying to goose the construction of new housing and apartments and stuff like that. And Kathy clearly is associated with that wing, call them NIMBYs or whoever, that are slower growth folks, you know. And, you know, that's become pretty clear in the time she's been on the council, a little different from how she campaigned, as we talked about previously in a previous episode. So, yeah, you know, to the extent that the pro-grow side is winning some of the fights, that's just politics. Though I will say, it's still a fight, right? I mean, it's not like even the comp plan that's on the table now is like a big, you know, big urbanist, cutting edge, you know,
yeah,
massive
that's the thing.
Growth.
It's way less
document,
dense than right? what Kathy Moore said she would support when she was running for office.
That's a hilarious part. 100% agree with you, Sandeep. The comp plan that the council's considering now is milquetoast. It's not status quo. It's status quo. And so that actually makes the point even more that Kathy Moore is opposed to that plan. I mean, is nuts, right? So even Bruce Harrell and these kind of even you know slow growthers like Bruce Harrell and are you know supporting this comp plan, and so it's not a good comp plan. It's kind of a real disappointment to urbanists. But again, Kathy Moore is not even for this one. So that puts her just really marginalized. And I think that's what she's experiencing, right?
Just imagine if the comp plan was upended over 8 blocks in Maple Leaf. That's what Kathy Moore is upset about. 8 blocks in Maple Leaf. I'm sure she's also not a fan of a lot of the other density, but that is what she is really fixated on. And yeah, I mean, that is just such a, in the scheme of things, such a minor battle. Allowing the possibility of future apartments, maybe, in a tiny area of one neighborhood in Seattle. That's not how a legislator should be behaving. You know, like if you're a city council member, you represent your district, you also represent the whole city. And to fixate on this tiny little thing, I mean, just shows like a very small way of thinking. And I'm, you know, singling Kathy out because that's what we're talking about. But I mean, this is not exclusive to her. This council really fixates on very small things that they want to get done. And sometimes when they lose, they throw a bit of a tantrum. And that's why we should get rid of district elections. Moving on.
Yeah. I would just throw out a last thing here because, you know, to speak to, there is a constituency, right? As you mentioned, Erica, there were, you know, not an insignificant number of people that signed some change.org petition, you know, calling for the not to do this neighborhood thing in Maple Leaf, the upzoning. And so while the pro-density urbanism is a growing force in the city of Seattle, there still is a significant contingent of people, often kind of older people, homeowners, maybe like, you know, kind of house rich, but not, you know, income rich, who kind of see the old Seattle of the Boeing era Seattle of the, you know, 1920s era bungalows and stuff like that fading away. And, you know, all the kind of issues downstream from inequality kind of coming into play and taking hold. And they see all of this sort of encroaching density and stuff like that as the leading edge of this negative change from their perception of the bad things that have happened in this new Seattle that is not egalitarian and not, you know, kind of, you know, they like the old kind of mossback provincial Seattle, and now it's this big city and it's got stark divides and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so they're very passionate about that, right? I mean, they're, you know, I've seen this in some of the levy campaigns that I did, you know, when I was running the city levy campaigns, right? When we did one about the creating a metropolitan parks district, we got like visceral. I can't tell you how angry the opposition was to create what seemed really benign to me. We're just creating a permanent stream of funding for parks, right? This, and they were like paranoid fantasies about how we were going to build airports and, like, you know, with this park money and stuff. I mean, it was really whack, right? But like, these people were super passionate about it. Like, because, and that's when it kind of dawned on me that this is more, it's about this sort of sense that
it's
this
fucking
kind of
nostalgia,
old world is
though.
Disappearing.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it's nostalgia. And it's also just like a lack, I feel, of communication with people who live in the real world that is Seattle now, which is, you know, the 60% and growing percentage of the population that rents and has seen their rents go up, you know, sometimes, you know, in those last 20 years or whatever, that the Boeing, retiree has seen their taxes go up on their house that they bought for $60,000. You know, the renters in the city have seen their rent triple or quadruple. And so, you know, there's an instability that most of us experience that people who bought houses ages and ages ago and don't have to make mortgage payments on them anymore or have very low mortgage payments just don't experience. And they don't have, you know, I mean, or maybe they do experience it. Maybe their kids tell them about it. But, you know, there just seems to be a lack of communication between those folks and the people that make up most of Seattle now, who are really struggling to get by in a city where housing is incredibly unaffordable because there's not enough of it.
I mean, the tell is that they always come back to the Joni Mitchell line, they pave paradise and put up a parking lot. I mean, so that tells you who this crowd is. And second of all, like, that actual line itself is a complete distortion of what's happening, because we're not trying to put up parking lots, we're trying to put up housing. And in fact, get rid of a car-centric society. So we're actually doing the opposite of their Joni Mitchell fantasy. We're trying to achieve their Joni Mitchell fantasy, frankly. That one's for the baby boomers. To let you
all
know,
right.
I see you,
yeah,
I understand you, and you're misunderstanding
you're
what's happening.
You're dating yourself, Mr. Fight.
Yeah.
I think we're past the 50th anniversary of the release of Blue. Like.
Greatest album of all time.
It was 1971,
man.
If I recall, Josh.
Yeah.
You guys can do a sing-along after we end this podcast.
Yeah. I could drink a case of you, Erica.
Oh, my God. Wow. That actually did. I know I'm usually playing, but that completely flew over my head.
The last time I saw Josh was Detroit in 68. He said all urbanists meet the same fate. So, anyway.
All right, I'm gonna end this. In case we still have a few listeners left, and move on. Move on briefly to another story that I just wrote about as we're recording this on Friday. Just wrote about it this morning, which is that Mayor Bruce Harrell wants to pass legislation that would make nightclub and bar owners responsible for actions of their patrons outside the premises of the bar or nightclub. And this comes in response to a spate of shootings that have happened in Pioneer Square recently, including a mass shooting. Four people were shot, three of them fatally, outside a nightclub. And in the legislation, it says that, you know, this is directly in response to shootings in Pioneer Square. And it honestly, as someone who's been in Seattle for a minute, it feels really familiar. Speaking of nostalgia, this is quite similar to legislation proposed by Mark Sidran back in the Sidran days. He was the city attorney who proposed a lot of law and order and anti-nightlife bills. He had an ordinance called the Added Activities Ordinance, which did pass, which basically said that nightclubs needed to get special licenses for extra activities like dancing. I can't remember what some of the other activities were, but it also made clubs responsible for things like, and bars, basically any venue, responsible for things like noise, litter, anything that occurred outside the venue and could be somehow tied to the venue. So the mayor's office says this is necessary because of shootings. But I will just say before I open it up, most of the shootings that have happened in Pioneer Square recently have not been nightclub related, although there was a big one and a tragedy that was nightlife related. But mayor says this will solve or address at least the problem of shootings. What say both of you?
Yeah, I mean, can I jump in first here? Because, you know, I covered the Sidran era pretty heavily as news editor at The Stranger. And this is just standard reactionary politics. And I got to say, I think this specific thing you cite about being responsible for activities that happen outside their clubs, I'm not sure that was a cornerstone of the Added Activities Ordinance. And if it was, if my memory is, and a civil rights attorney named David Osgood got most of Sidran's stuff thrown out as unconstitutional, but it's constantly challenged. So I assume this one should be challenged and probably will be challenged as unconstitutional. And You know, what really makes me sad here is, you know, Eric and I both work down at Pioneer Square. I have found myself down at Pioneer Square a ton lately. So this is anecdotal, but it does feel like there's a little bit of a, frankly, a renaissance going on in Pioneer, is afoot in Pioneer Square right now in terms of traffic, pedestrian traffic, people out, new businesses opening, new businesses that have opened in the past year or so getting successful. So that's not to say that shootings aren't happening and that that's not real. Both things might be real, but there does seem to be something working in Pioneer Square right now. So it seems sad to me that we would try and, in a reactionary way, kind of put a barrier up to that, particularly for nightlife. Seems like the wrong
very
move.
Cool
I
rooftop
think.
Bar that just
yep,
opened
yep,
in Pioneer.
Yep, that's right. I was there. It's a great spot. It's
populous,
on Washington.
Populous hotel.
That's right.
That's
exactly right. That's right. We should go, Sandeep, and continue arguing about Kathy Moore.
Am I not invited?
I hang out with you too much, Erica. But
apparently
sad
you are invited. Josh and I need some quality time.
Apparently. You, Josh, and Joni Mitchell.
We're going to talk about, 1968
again. Gotta talk about 68. So it's just sad to see that the answer, obviously, I feel like the answer to these kinds of, when you have kind of issues like this, is more people on the sidewalk, more eyes on the sidewalk, and that's to create a rich nightlife. And, you know, you see that whether it's on public transit or whether it's in a pedestrian urban environment. The more people the more people that are there, the more comfortable people are, the more these incidents, which do happen. We live in a society, these things happen, but I think the best solution is to kind of create a vibrant place and have more eyes and feet out. So it's a bummer to see Harold retreating to this reactionary position that we've tried before, and I doubt is legal.
I will say this, because you were introing this topic, I just had this shard of memory that I'm pretty sure one of the very first things I wrote when I was first hired by The Stranger in August of 2002 was some like 300 word item about how the city was going after some hip-hop club. Remember when at the time it was like, oh yeah, these hip-hop clubs attract these, I can't remember, like I vaguely remember writing something about you know, oh, you know, that everybody's up in arms about these terrible hip-hop clubs that are bringing the wrong think about that from like, you know, 23 years ago. But I will say this, like, if we've got a problem in Pioneer Square late on Friday and Saturday nights, you know, how about a little more police presence down there? Wouldn't that, you know, rather than going after the nightclubs, like, I actually think that might be the more appropriate solution than sort of trying to, like,
I mean, do you have evidence that there isn't a police presence down there? Evidence that police prevent shooting? I mean,
well, I don't,
you know,
think we have enough police for there to be much of a presence down there. Frankly, like the night shifts for SVD are often like undersubscribed or whatever. And we see that with the 911, the lack of response sometimes even to priority 2 calls, which are fairly significant calls that still don't get a response. So, and that, you know, look, I'm in Pioneer Square too, and there have been some shootings. I was talking to you guys before we started taping about, there was a weekend a couple months ago where there was shootings on both a Friday and a Saturday night, late night. And one of them, there were 45 shots fired. Two people were tragically shot. I think both one lived and one did not. One person lived and one did not. But one of those bullets, you know, came through our conference room window of our office. So, like, that's not super cool. On the other hand, cracking down on nightclubs, you know, I mean, look, if there's some real problem businesses, they have plenty of tools already to go after them. And if there's stuff happening on the streets in particular places at night, that's a policing issue, it seems to me.
Nightclubs are providing this renaissance. Nightlife is providing the energy to crack down on the very source of the vibrancy seems ass backwards.
The other thing that the bill does that changes the law is it adds liquor violations to the reasons that a property can be declared a nuisance. And when a property is declared a nuisance, to be clear, I mean, it can be shut down. There are other things that the city can do short of shutting it down, like fining it. But this is a way to shut down clubs completely as well. And so now, I mean, you have a situation where if there are three or more of these violations, either at the property itself or, you know, down the block, if somebody's, you know, drinking or smoking weed down the block, and they can be tied to that club, they came out of there or whatever, that can be a premise for shutting down a club. And I mean, it just vastly expands. It's not as expansive as the Sidrin law, which again, like, you know, allowed the city to blame bars and clubs for things like litter and traffic, but it's pretty expansive. And I think it, you know, it gives police a lot more power to go in and, you know, and patrol clubs that, you know, the city defines as problematic and find reasons to shut them down.
Yeah. I mean, you were bringing up the Sidrin law, but I was just going to add to just adding to your point. Remember Nichols had the huge, you know, nightlife license thing that was essentially another attempt to, you know, kind of continue to use this sort of licensing process to shut down clubs that, you know, neighbors complained about because they were too noisy or whatever, right? Or
well, and
activity that, yeah.
Ed Murray, too, on the hookah lounges.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, and we should say, I mean, not just Murray, but Harrell also had a separate law that went after hookah lounges that, you know, imposed a bunch of new licensing and security requirements on late night, you know, after hours. He's called them, you know, nightlife and clubs. But what he's really targeting specifically are hookah lounges where, you know, there isn't liquor typically. And, you know, and the violations are, I mean, it's just similarly designed to give police more power to shut down these lounges. So this city, you know, look, I'm going to sound like every other asshole, I guess, but like I was in New York recently and, you know, and like just hanging out and having a beer, a non-alcoholic beer for me, a beer for my partner and like sitting on the sidewalk. And I flash back, Josh, to Slices, the the pizza parlor that got in trouble when I was at the Stranger for allowing people to drink beer on the patio, because the theory was that they would be order a beer and then hand it to a minor on the sidewalk who would then take the beer and drink it. And I mean, the city just has some real fantasies about how things work. I think just historically, politicians in this city will take any opportunity to use a tragedy or really just a fantasy of what could happen in the, you know, the case with the pizza parlor and turn it into a law that makes it harder for people to do business here. And I think that has just been like a through line the whole time I've lived here that has never really changed.
While I'm essentially in agreement, I will just to be fair here. I mean, on the hookah lounges question, like back in the Ed Murray days, there was a very high profile, you know, tragic killing of a CID kind of community leader named Donnie Chin outside. I believe that was outside of a hookah lounge in the CID that sort of prompted that effort at legislation back then. A couple of months ago, though, I'm trying to remember the details, but down in kind of the south end of the city, there was a shooting where I believe it was a security guard at a hookah lounge got shot and killed. This is just a couple of months ago. So there have been, you know, I mean, there are incidents.
But there are incidents. There's an incident at your office, Sandeep. So are we shutting down consulting offices? Yeah. I mean,
please,
you know,
do.
It's just
spare me. Spare me having to deal with the city anymore.
Maybe this is a way to finally get rid of that awful profession. But I mean, you know, it just feels like there are certain kinds of businesses that the city loves to go after. And tie to shootings and tragedies and you know, and I would say capitalize in some ways politically on tragedies by saying this is going to fix it if we just, you know, allow the city to take down hookah lounges, to take down nightclubs. And I think a lot of people want hookah lounges and nightclubs to continue to exist. And there has to be a way to enforce existing laws. You know, I don't know that it is flooding the streets with police every night, Sandeep. That seems like a very expensive solution, but maybe it's that. You know, some way to enforce existing laws that are already on the books that prevent people from murdering each other or that, you know, prohibit people from murdering each other short of let's shut down all the nightlife. And, you know, it just frustrates me that that is always the first thing that politicians in the city go to.
I mean, it's very similar to the way the Trump administration is going after transit, and it's created this idea that that's transit is this incubator for crime. No, like, just as Erica said, we're not shutting down Sandeep's building because there's a shooting there, and we shouldn't be defunding transit in New York City as Trump administration wants to do because there's crime on the subway.
Well, and also, just last thing, I mean, if let's say there is a super problematic club, I'm not saying that's not possible, and it doesn't happen, and there are businesses that need to be shut down. I mean, King County shuts down businesses all the time temporarily because they have health violations, right? So it is already possible to shut down a bar for liquor violations. We do not need a chronic nuisance law on top of existing state laws to make it easier for the city to do that. I mean, there are plenty of ways to shut a business down. They have to follow all kinds of regulations or risk getting shut down. And this specifically, you know, nightlife targeted local law just feels like, you know, piling on the same way we have a local drug ordinance. You know, it's just this, you know, law and order on top of law and order on top of law and order. And in this case, designed, as Josh said, to, you know, crack down on nightlife in an area that really is resurging. And, you know, and I work down there too. I'm not often there at night, but I mean, except, you know, going home from work. But it does feel way more vibrant, and it's one part of the city that feels exciting now. And I don't want to see that, that die.
There you have it, Seattle. Seattle Nice tells you to party on. Go to your local problem nightclub and wave your Glock around.
bring a bong.
It's all good. We're for it.
All right. That has been another episode of Seattle Nice. Our editor is Quinn Waller. Thank you all so much for listening. David Hyde will be back. Who knows?
Special thanks to our special guest and our favorite Talib, Josh Pike, for joining us today on Seattle Night.
Happy to be here with you.